Take a deep breath. A deep breath in and a big exhale. One more time. Long, slow, deep, rich breath. And just blow it out. Joe and Elaine recommend deep breathing. I asked them this morning. They spend a lot of time in the pool at the aquatic center. And I said, is part of your practice in being in the pool is that so that you can quicken your breath so you can breathe more intensely and so you can add oxygen to your bloodstream? And Joe said, yes, it's very important to keep breathing. Feel love. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Just feel in your wonderful imagination the love you feel for someone you dearly love, as though that person were standing right in front of you right now, right this instant. Don't think about it. Just feel it. Feel the love, baby. Feel the love. I know for some of you this will be terribly hard. Do your best to feel love. Why not think about it? Because thinking about it removes it from immediacy. Love is so powerful. It can make us weep with joy or weep with grief. Oh, how we miss the ones we loved who are gone from among us. To love one of them right here, right now, is to touch a painful place within us. It might make us cry. We don't much want to cry around other people. We'd rather just think about them and hope that this feeling of grief will pass quickly. But if we feel love right here, right now, for someone we still have with us, we might also weep for joy, or laugh with joy, or otherwise express emotions that might make this place sound like a Pentecostal holiness church. Feel the love. We are the people of the thought process. Don't be asking us to feel anything. Yet our feelings are the stuff of our lives. When something good happens and we perceive the goodness of it, it makes us feel good. When something bad happens and we perceive the hurt or the shame or the confusion or the anger it evokes, we feel bad. This is so important. We really believe that we can figure this thing out. Life, politics, religion, business, money, nutrition, good health, academics, you name it. We think we can think our way into understanding what is going on. And even if we can't solve all the problems of the world, we think we can at least be right and hang out with people who think like us. Now, in the text of this sermon, there is a cuss word. And I'm not going to use it, because I've sought the advice of a few members of the congregation and they have advised me against using this particular word. But its initials are BS. So let me read to you again that which was going to inspire me to use profanity. My mother used to say when I couldn't get a jar to unscrew, you know, get the lid off a jar, my mother used to say, cuss it. She'd say, don't you know any good cuss words? But I've chosen not to cuss this morning, only to use initials. But this is the statement that I just made, which would have been followed by that awful word. We really believe we can figure this thing out. Life, politics, religion, business, money, nutrition, good health, academics, you name it. We think we can think our way into understanding what is going on. And even if we can't solve all the problems of the world, we think we can at least be right and hang out with people who think like us. Thomas Edison, who spent a great deal of time thinking, said, "We do not know 1/1,000,000 about anything." We don't live in the state of South Carolina. We live in a state of confusion. And dear goodness, does that create anxiety and fear and worry and anger and sadness. Connie Goodbread, who serves on our UUA staff, was talking with Carlton Smith, another member of the UUA staff, both of whom who have visited this congregation in recent months. Connie was describing the fear, anxiety, worry, anger, and sadness of so many UUs as our country sinks into a quagmire of political and social and military and corporate madness. And Carlton said, "Connie, you white people are just experiencing what black people have been experiencing for 400 years. So this morning you are being asked to feel love instead of all that other gunk. This morning you are being challenged to laugh with joy instead of groaning under the weight of all that other gunk. And where does my authority come from to offer such a challenge? Mama did it. Mama lived with dementia for 7 years. She never called my name or told me I needed a haircut in all those 7 years. She never called me Booger or Pumpkinhead, two of her favorite nicknames for me. She had great difficulty remembering anything. Before she completely lost the power of speech, she had great difficulty remembering the ends of sentences. She would start to speak a sentence and then lose the sentence before she could get to the end of it. She found that enormously frustrating. And yet she never lost the capacity to smile and make faces and hug and kiss. She lost the power to think. She kept the energy of love. The last sermon I delivered before taking vacation was an attempt to touch on this possibility. Some of the feedback that I got is that many of you had no idea what I was talking about. That has to be okay. That's happened to me many times in my pulpit work. I don't worry a lot about it. But I do hope to be understood, and I don't sweat bullets when I am not. But let me reach back to that last sermon for just a moment in hopes of getting to the point of today's sermon. Krishnamurti, the Indian mystic and spiritual teacher, encouraged us to directly experience beautiful flowers. There are beautiful flowers on the chalice table this morning. How many of us can look at those flowers and let their beauty pour into us rather than thinking about them? How do we avoid the internal chatter? Yes, they are beautiful flowers. I wonder who brought them this morning. Isn't it wonderful that they just appear there every Sunday? I wonder how I might volunteer to be part of the flower ministry. Well, I have beautiful flowers in my garden. I wish my friend were here to enjoy these flowers with me. Maybe I'll walk down and smell the flowers before I leave the sanctuary this morning. Oh, probably not. That might seem obnoxious to the other people who are here this morning. My, my, aren't they beautiful flowers? Silencing the monkey mind and allowing the beauty of the flowers just to pour into us is a real challenge. What does that even mean? What would the direct experience of beauty feel like? How does this work? Why is this so important to that old crazy man who is talking down there in the pulpit? Who does this guy even think he is? This is important because thought, especially monkey mind, removes us from the spiritual energy that it takes to live this life. And sooner or later, it wears us out completely. It makes us tired. It makes us whine. It makes us crazy. Love does none of those things. As we love, we connect to the energy that keeps us alive. As we fail to love, we invest in ego and the separate stories of personal identity. How important we are. How important it is that we get other people to behave like we want them to. How important it is that we behave in ways that other people want us to. Thought is a trap of personal seriousness. Love is liberation from that trap into the risky world of maybe I'm not so serious after all. You've heard me say before the wonderful words of Kaya Hartwood. Everybody's important, just not that important. I laugh for joy at the wisdom in that quip. Love creates energy. Love calls us out of our heads and into our hearts. You know this already. You understand it. But understanding is back to thinking. Yeah, Pat, we got this. Listen again to that wonderful Jack Kornfield quote you have heard me read many times. Kornfield is an American Buddhist, and his books are well worth reading. He writes, "The longing for love and the movement of love is underneath all our activities. The happiness we discover in life is not about possessing or owning or even understanding. Instead, it is the discovery of this capacity to love, to have a loving, free, and wise relationship with all of life. Such love is not possessive, but arises out of a sense of our own well-being and connection to everything. Therefore, it is generous and wakeful, and it loves the freedom of all things. Out of love, our path can lead us to honor the sacred in life, to bless whatever we encounter, and to wish all beings well." I'd give up chocolate ice cream made with coconut milk before I would give up the wisdom in that quote. To have a loving, free, and wise relationship with all of life. Yes, that's the ticket. Not to be able to understand life, but to love it. Think about the purely physical things you have learned in your life. How to walk, how to ride a bicycle, how to swim or hit a baseball or play the piano. These things don't come of understanding. You simply move from a time when you don't do them into a time when you do them. It's called muscle memory. Well, dadgummit, love is muscle memory. It's not an intellectual function. If it were, people with Down syndrome couldn't do it. And that is not to diminish the intellectual power of people with Down syndrome. It's just a different kind of love. I once did a worship service among a group of people who had Down syndrome. They loved me and each other as if it were their last day on the planet and the source of their greatest joy. We thinking people are restrained in our love because we are scared to death of being misunderstood or looking foolish. And by golly, that fear comes from a very real place. My mother looked incredibly foolish, loving on every person who walked into her nursing home room. She would hug us all, kiss us all, make funny faces at us all. Maybe she was scared she would miss somebody, but no, not really. She just did it because she had spent a lifetime doing it, and when her brain went on wavers, she kept on giving us all of her heart. Love is the great equalizer. Thinking stacks us up against each other, with somebody always coming out on top. I have a friend who drives herself and me nuts by saying over and over again, "I just want to understand." Well, I'm sorry. It ain't gonna happen. The Apostle Paul wrote, "Now we see through a glass darkly." Now we see through a glass darkly. We are confused because it is our natural state. Miller Beer ran commercials for Beer Light years ago in which they said, "Why ask why?" I had a therapist once who told me, "Don't ever ask why questions. People have no idea why they do what they do. People just do what they do, and when you ask them why, it only increases their confusion." And of course, I am not urging you to stop thinking. You can't. But please consider that there is more going on in life than what we think about. Daddy used to say he was a lover, not a fighter. But he would fight like a demon when things didn't go to suit him. I could never get him to relax when he had to wait to see a doctor. He would growl and grumble and give up his joy to the frustrations of having to wait in the doctor's office. His thinking had convinced him he did not need to love in that situation. How much more fun he would have had if he had just loved it. As a newspaper reporter, I covered district and superior court. One of the lessons learned was that court never starts on time. One morning, I was sitting writing in my journal, waiting on court to start. A rather self-important woman sitting next to me blew huge sighs and checked her watch. And after a few seconds, she would blow a huge sigh and check her watch. And finally, I turned to her and I said, "Ma'am, I've been covering court for 10 years. I said, you can check your watch till the cows come home, but they're not going to start court on time." And she looked at me as though she could kill me. And she said, "Why don't you go back to writing in your little book?" I wasn't particularly loving toward her. And she, if she could have gotten away with it, would have killed me. Could I have been more loving if I had asked her to talk about her feelings? Yes. Certainly, I could have done Marshall Rosenberg's creative communication and asked her what she needed in that moment. Certainly, I missed an opportunity, and she spared my life. So the question remains on the table. How do we cede to love its superior position in thought? Thinking will back us away from the fire. Loving encourages us to jump in. That doesn't sound so good. Thinking will encourage an identity with our thoughts, the stories we tell, our own agenda. Loving will simply expand our vision, help us back up the camera to see a wider view. Necessity may be the mother of invention, but thinking sure helps. Loving will define how our invention is shared with the world. Will we buy a company that manufactures EpiPens and then increase the price by several thousand percent? Or will we, like Bill and Melinda Gates, donate the lion's share of our fortunes to a foundation whose goal is to create a world where all people live healthy, productive lives? And finally, how does all this make you feel? Did you find some feelings of love at the beginning of these remarks? Were you able to focus your attention on someone or some pet or some activity that you love? Jack Kornfield is so right. The longing for love and the movement of love is underneath all our activities. We have been tricked. We have been tricked into thinking our lives is going to create the right thoughts, and then clinging to those thoughts come what may. But that is not what life is about. Underneath all those thoughts is a simple assumption. If I think the right thoughts, I will be okay. And by being okay, I will be lovable. I will be able to connect to people who might love me and accept me and treat me with respect, and that will feel like love. I will be okay enough to find people I can love and accept and treat with respect. And in that journey, I will pass enough muster to be lovable and acceptable and respectable to myself. Ultimately, those thoughts may or may not be true, but at least that's what we're shooting for. Ultimately, we won't care about the validity of our thoughts, but we will measure ourselves deeply and truly by the validity of our love.